Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is he." Others said, "No, but he is like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." So they said to him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I do not know." They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been formerly blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, "He put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was a division among them. So they said again to the man, "What do you say about him since he has opened your eyes?" He said, "He is a prophet." And now verse 35. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you." He said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see me may see, and those who see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said to him, "Are we also blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, 'We see,' your guilt remains." This is the word of the Lord.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to be here. A privilege, in fact, to be back with you all. And I thank Keith Paulus for his welcome and invitation to be here today. Well, you might like to keep that reading from John chapter 9 open in front of you. Almost everything around us contains pores, P-O-R-E-S. The floor under our feet, the pews we're sitting on, our skin, and our brain are porous. Pores are a necessary part of our health and well-being. For example, blood in our skin opens and closes, pores in our skin enabling us to cope with temperature change. Pores are also a necessary part of the world around us. The pores in the Earth's surface enable the movement of vital water that sustains life. Interestingly, scientists are exploring ways to store climate gases responsibly in the Earth's surface. In particular, high-level research is being carried out using mathematics and natural sciences to solve ways to store carbon gases in porous rocks beneath the sea. Porosity is an important aspect of the world around us and to our life and well-being. Now, let me take this notion of porosity to a totally different level. The porosity of the universe. I'm speaking of a non-material, supernatural dimension of existence, beyond the space-time material world that is capable of movement in the material world. So with those thoughts in mind, let's have a little look at some of the key elements of John chapter 9. The drama is played out in what we might say are three acts, as in a play. Act 1, we find in the opening section. Just look at the opening line. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from his birth. The scene was a familiar sight, a blind man begging on the side of the road. But this man hadn't contracted blindness through the dusty, disease-laden air of the roads. He had been born blind. And the reaction of Jesus' disciples reflected a theology that bubbled through the ages. Who sinned, they asked, this man or his parents? And this line of thinking, of course, is found today when people ask, why has this happened to me? In John chapter 9, Jesus dismisses the question. It was not that this man sinned or his parents, he said, but that the works of God might be revealed in him. Sin wasn't the reason this man was on the streets begging. Rather, it was so that God's power might be revealed. Jesus' intervention would point to the reality that we live in a porous universe. Now, I'm sure you noticed the high drama of the miracle that follows. Jesus doesn't look for any expression of faith. He simply acts. He spat on the ground, made clay, and anointed the man's eyes. Go and wash, he commanded. The man obeyed. He went and washed and came back seeing. Now think how the drama of these events would be written up today. There'd be a detailed description of every word, of every step of the action of Jesus. There'd be interviews with people who had witnessed the action, along with the inevitable question, how did you feel? The gospel account almost seems flat and disappointing. There are no emotional details. But what mattered was what was done, not what the man felt. With this, the curtain closes on Act 1. And Act 2 unfolds with some very significant and very interesting conversations. And as these conversations unfold, it becomes increasingly evident that the man had not only been physically blind, he had also been spiritually blind. Let's consider what happens. Verses 8 through 12 reveal the first conversation is with the man's neighbours. He'd gone home, and it seems as though everyone was talking at once. Looks like the blind beggar, says one. Oh, it can't be him, says another. I am the man, he says. But how can you see, they ask. And he tells them, simply and straightforwardly, the man Jesus healed me. It's a terrific testimony. But the signs of tension emerge with a second conversation. The Pharisees call the man in, and in verses 13 through 17, we discover they weren't impressed. The man had been healed on the Sabbath, and their views conflicted with one another. One group of the Pharisees insisted that no one from God would heal on the Sabbath. Another group said, how can a sinner do such things? What do you think? They asked the man. I think he's the prophet, was the response. Now, in a third conversation, the blind man wasn't present. The Pharisees had gone to see the man's parents. And it seems to me those Pharisees roughed the parents up. To begin with, They clearly didn't want to accept the miracle, but the parents' witness was unshakable. He was born blind, they said. Now he can see. But they wouldn't say any more. That's the parents, and we can understand why. Those self-absorbed Pharisees warned that anyone who said that Jesus was the Messiah would be excommunicated. That would mean those parents would lose their position, their career, their friends, their credit rating. Don't involve us, they said. Ask our son. He is of age. Well, the drama continues with a third conversation when the Pharisees met with the formerly blind man. You were born in utter sin, they said. The man was probably in his 20s. His eyes had just been opened. For the first time in his life, he can see the faces of people who had been leaders in the church since he was a child. And it began to dawn on him that these revered leaders were not open to the facts. We know that God has spoken to Moses, they were saying, but as for this man, we don't know where he's come from. But the young man sees through them. Just look at verse 30. The man answered, "Why, this is an amazing thing. You don't know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshipper of God and does his will, God listens to them. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone has opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." Now, I'm sure you can see what that man has just said. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. And the Pharisees heard it too. And because of the logical progression of this man's thinking, they threw him out. They didn't really believe that we live in a porous universe, that Jesus is the man from heaven who has come amongst us. And that brings us to a fourth conversation. Just look at verse 35. When Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" This opens what seems to me to be one of the most beautiful short conversations found in the whole of the Bible. We find it in verses 35 through 37. The man had rejected, or what had been rejected by the religious leaders of the nation, but Jesus sought him out. He treated the man seriously. "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" he asks. And what follows is the response of someone who is honest, someone who is open to the truth. "Who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" the man asked. "Who is he that I may believe?" Let me suggest that this is a question that countless numbers of people in this city and across the United States and around the world, who, if they knew the answer to that question, would believe. Jesus spoke of this when he said elsewhere, "The fields are ripe under harvest." And you may have noticed the news item on Friday noting the unexpected box office success of the film, The Jesus Revolution. And the comment was that many people are searching for meaning. It's one of the reasons I continue to encourage people everywhere to invite family and friends to read the first 18 sentences of the real story about Jesus, using a wonderful annotated version of the Gospel of John. You can find it at www.theword121. It's alphanumeric. THEWORD and the numbers 121. There's my little commercial for the day. Jesus said to the man, "You have seen him. With your own eyes, you have seen me, the Son of Man. And now as I speak to you," Jesus said to him, "I am enlightening your mind and your heart. Lord, I believe," the man responded. And he worshipped Jesus as though he were God. This is one of the clearest statements in John's Gospel as to not only understanding who Jesus is, but what the rightful response is. He worshipped Jesus as though he were God. Events like this are disturbing, are they not, today? If they're true, they awaken us to the reality of the supernatural and the porosity of the universe, that there is more to life than the material world, and such is the nature of the universe that the supernatural can choose to enter it. Yet the idea of an existence beyond the material universe of space and time goes against today's wisdom that only science and facts provide the truth. In A Brief History of Time, the late Stephen Hawking wrote, and I put these quotes, these references in the front of your bulletin, "We are such insignificant creatures on a minor planet of a very average star in the outer suburb of one of 100 billion galaxies. So it's difficult to believe in a God that could care about us or even notice our existence." Dr. Henry Schaefer, Fritz Schaefer, one of the world's leading quantum chemists, has written, "My response to that statement by Hawking and to others that have said this over the years is that's a silly thing to say. Human beings thus far appear to be the most advanced species in the universe. Maybe God does care about us." Where Hawking surveys the cosmos and concludes that humanity's defining characteristic is obscurity, I consider the same data and conclude that humankind is very special. Maybe God cares about us. "Yes, indeed," says the Apostle John. Look again at the healed man's response. "Lord, I believe." And he worshipped Jesus as though he were God. Just think of the steps that have led to this man's response. Verse 11, he began by calling Jesus a man. Verse 17, he calls Jesus a prophet. Verse 33, he says, this man must be from God. And verse 37, he worships Jesus as God. It's a picture of a road many travel as they awaken in their understanding of Jesus. Yes, they discover Jesus actually did live, despite what so many people are saying. He actually did live. Yes, as I start to look and investigate the truth, I find that he's a prophet. He must be from God, becomes another thought along the way. He is God. He is my Lord. But the drama of John chapter 9 doesn't stop with the end of Act 2, as I call it. There's a third act that unfolds in verses 39 on. In verse 39 we read, Jesus said, "For judgment I came into this world, so that those who do not see may see, so that those who see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard this, and they said to him, "Are we also blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, 'We see,' your guilt remains." Jesus' words here in Act 3 are sobering. Thinking they spiritually see, the Pharisees are in fact spiritually blind. They refuse to acknowledge their need of spiritual sight, which, as Jesus pointed out to Nicodemus back in John chapter 3, could only be given by God's Spirit at work in their lives. So without the breath of God in our lives, guilt remains. We need the new birth of the Spirit of God. Whenever Jesus spoke, he created a crisis, a tension within people. Every time we speak about Jesus, people will react in one of two ways. Some will want to find out more. Others will be driven further into the darkness of unbelief. But there's a very positive note to this chapter. Through the miracle Jesus performed, through his own testimony, and through the testimony of this formerly blind man, Jesus is demonstrably the Lord from heaven, the man from heaven. And there's more as we think about this. The miracle is, in fact, a parable. Through the healing of the man born blind, Jesus shows us his greater purpose, to give us spiritual sight. But he also shows us that he alone can do this. He can give us the spiritual sight through the work of his Spirit in our lives. We can't do it or get it by our own efforts. It's God who opens the eyes of faith to the truth of Jesus. But it's also true that he involves us in his working, opening blind eyes. He uses us as instruments to introduce people to Jesus through the word of the gospel. The Spirit of God doesn't act in a vacuum. The Spirit and the word of the gospel are closely tied together. So when we think about it, the privilege that God gives to us of communicating this gospel is a terrific privilege and awesome responsibility. So every time we talk about Jesus to our children, nephews, nieces, grandchildren, godchildren, every time we teach in Sunday school or give a talk or lead a Bible study, every time we talk with someone over coffee perhaps about Jesus, every word we speak in the name of Christ has the capacity to be an eye opener. So what do we need to do? We need to be praying for God and his mercy through his Spirit to be at work, opening blind eyes, but also giving us the grace and the strength to play our part in just quietly looking for opportunities to introduce others to Jesus, who is the Lord from heaven. So let me ask, do you really believe that our material universe is porous? A universe where the transcendent, the supernatural, the Creator God can come amongst us? That in Jesus Christ, the Creator God who gave us life and sight has in fact come amongst us? That God does care about us and is committed to the work of opening spiritual lives of many, drawing us to the truth and a living hope that can only be found in the Lord Jesus Christ. Do you believe this?